Jeannie, she can sit here.
Good afternoon. It is 1:36, and I am calling this meeting of House, Finance Committee to order. It's 1:36 on Friday, February 24th, and today president is Representative Ortiz, Representative Wilson, Vice Chair Guerra, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Grin, Representative Guttenberg, myself, Co-Chair Seaton. Before we start, remind everybody their cell phones. First on our schedule today is House Bill 115. We are not going to take any action or hear any presentations on 115 today, but I wanted to make members aware that there are six amendments to HB 115 on your desks, and that these have been made available to the public. All of these amendments relate to the permanent fund section of House Bill 115. Some are merely technical cleanups, and others are changes to reflect comments and presentations we received during the first week of hearings on the bill. We are not going to bring up or discuss the amendments today because members have not had adequate time to review them, and because we have some subcommittee reports to go through, but members now have them for review, and I or my staff will be available to answer any clarifying questions that members have as well. So there are the six amendments that you have, and those are also posted on BASIS. So now we'll go to subcommittee reports, and we'll start with the Department of Administration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As subcommittee chair of the Department of Administration, I recommend that the fiscal year 2018 budget for the department include $68,850,000 in unrestricted general funds and $336,602,000 in total funds. If amendments are adopted, the unrestricted general fund difference from the FY15 management plan to the FY18 House subcommittee recommended budget is a reduction of $17,180,200, a 20% decrease. The unrestricted general fund difference from FY17 management plan to FY18 House subcommittee recommended budget is a reduction of $3,104,700, a decrease of 4.3%. I have recommended one subcommittee budget amendment, four governor amendments that we'll discuss in a moment, along with six statutory change proposals, which I will be forwarding on to the chairs of the House State Affairs and House Judiciary Policy Committees.
Thank you, Representative Grin. I see there are five amendments. Representative Grin, would you care to move Amendment GA1?
Thank you. Yes, I move Amendment GA1 to /15.
I'll object for the purpose of discussion.
Amendment number one accepts the governor's request to delete a full-time deputy commissioner, which is a range 28 position located in Juneau, from the office of the commissioner. This would reduce the personal services line in the office of the commissioner by $173,600 in unrestricted general funds and $15,500 in interagency receipts, for a total decrement of $189,100. Should this amendment pass, the commissioner's office will still have one remaining deputy commissioner to assist in general oversight of the department's operations and initiatives.
Okay. Thank you. Is there discussion from the committee? Representative Guttenberg.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm often concerned when we delete people who we interact with ourselves. I'm wondering if the department has a concern that this will hamper their ability to facilitate conversations and with the legislature or with the community at large.
And do we have anybody from the Department of Administration? Good afternoon. Would you go ahead and place yourself on the record, and did you hear the question or need it repeated?
Good morning. For the record, my name is Sherry Lowenstein, the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Administration, and I did hear. But thank you. Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg. In this case, we have a number of initiatives that are going on that we needed two deputies for. We now have hired some leaders in shared services and in the IT initiative. We've also done some restructuring in retirement and benefits, so we believe at this time we're becoming more self-sufficient with our directors that we can afford to let one deputy go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection to the adoption or Representative Foster?
I'll remove my objection.
Is there any further objection? Seeing no objection, Amendment GA1 is adopted. Let's see, or is approved. And we'll take a brief at ease at this time.
We'll gather back on record, and Co-Chair Seaton, would you move Amendment LH DOA-1?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Amendment LH DOA-1.
For purpose of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This language amendment rewords Section 9F in House Bill 57, Version J, to clarify that the cost of necessary actuarial work done at the request of the legislature will be paid from the general fund for FY17 and 18.
Okay. Are there any questions of the committee? Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I understand this right, the work done at the request of the legislature right now is paid for by the department or an RSS, or how is that done, or is it right out of general funds now? Just trying to figure out how that rolls forward.
Representative Seaton.
And my understanding is it's unclear right now. If we have a purchaser bill come forward, there is a requirement that there's actuarial fiscal note that has to accompany it before it can go to the floor. And this is making sure, because the purchaser's board is not wanting to pay for actuarial work that's done not for the purchaser's board, but that is done for legislative purposes. So this makes sure that it is the case that if we put forward purchaser's bills that require actuarial analysis, that the general fund will be paying for those.
Good, thank you. If I can follow through, I certainly support the work of a department that we request should not come out of their budget, because we can drive them into the ground. But I'm just the question of who else was doing that. But we'll have time down the road to figure that out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we've got a question from Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, and maybe I looked wrong when I looked online. Online, I found the subcommittee report, but I didn't see these amendments as part of it. Did I just not go back far enough? Were these all part of the packet online?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am the subcommittee chair for the language section of the bill, and so this is a language amendment that is coming forward and is. We are trying to take up the language amendments at the same time we're taking up each department. And so we have actually two subcommittees reporting through here, and one is the language section that are being made here at this time.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
And I understand. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is where were those located prior to the meeting? Because we have a lot more that we're going to have on Monday, and I'm just trying to figure out, is it somewhere besides the department? When this department closed, that was one subcommittee. report, and I did see that and all the things that were in there. Are your reports on the language somewhere else online to be able to, so we know what's coming before us during the meeting?
And, Mr. Chair, can we take a brief at ease while
Brief at ease. Okay, House Finance is back on record, and we've got Mr. David Teal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance, and I know I'm not supposed to use a cell phone in committee, but I'm looking online just to see what this is named. There is, on our website, under budget reports, there's a House subcommittee recommendations. That will contain, that link will take you to the subcommittee recommendations, which would be only the numbers or the Section 1 amendments and the narrative. Then also posted online is the House subcommittee amendment packets. That is the full packet. Again, the narrative, the transaction detail, including any language amendments that were added, as is the case this time, and then the documentation, any supporting documents are attached right behind the amendments themselves, then the report. So your packet that you have in front of you should be exactly what's available on the web and was handed out yesterday.
Thank you. Any further questions?
I guess I just didn't go far enough back in it. So that would be my mistake, and I will go further next time. So I am still trying to. So I guess what this amendment would do is, so right now they don't keep track on the actuaries on where we're at and how much we owe. Anyway, I mean, is this something that has to be a separate report or something that they can't just generate off of a computer? I mean, how many hours are we talking about that they would have to put in to something like this and cost-wise?
Representative.
Thank you, and I think that we may have somebody from administration that could tell us approximate cost, but actuarial analyses depend upon what the bill says, so they have to go in and do an actuarial analysis over the, I don't know if they do the next 20 years, but they do over what is this effect of the bill that we're passing going to have on the PERS, TERS fund, and retirement benefits for the foreseeable future, but if the administration can come forward and maybe they can give the cost estimate.
Mr. Chairman, before she starts, I have a question.
Representative Guttenberg.
That relates straight to this. We're amending the wording in Section 9F. Is that specifically the TERS-PERS liability, or is it across the board in all departments?
For the record, my name is Sherry Lowenstein, the Administrative Services Director for Department of Administration. This language is new in the bill this year. We've not had it previously. We found historically that, as the Chair has mentioned, for every bill that comes forward that affects, well, not everyone, everyone that we actuarial work on, that affects the PERS or TERS, we need to go to our contractor to provide that historic information and the number that we put on a fiscal note. In this case, retirement benefits only has $68,000 of general funds that's available for actuarial work. Anything over and above that is what we're seeking in this language. Did that answer both questions?
Mr. Chair, so thank you, Mr. Chair. To repeat my question, is Section 9F in House Bill 57 only referring to the work done in retiree benefits and not across the board to other departments?
Through the Chair, Representative Gutenberg, yes, that is correct. It is only referring.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions?
I guess.
Representative Seaton?
Yes. I had a question. Do we know what approximately an actuarial analysis will cost when it's done, if there's any kind of a major change in a PERS, TERS bill?
Chair Seaton, I do not know what an average cost is. It would be, as you indicated, depending upon the request, the ask. So what the bill was intended to do, they need to look at different historical information in order to, so it depends on the volume of work that they need to do to answer the question.
Okay, are there any further questions?
One more question.
Representative Guttenberg?
Which probably I'm not asking to be answered right now, but is in the departments when the legislature asks for reports and work done analysis, is there a cost code that separate that out from other things? So if the all of the various departments in the state would put together their numbers, the amount of work that we require them to do, is there an accounting for that separate from all their other work?
Through the Chair, Representative Guttenberg. In retirement benefits, yes, there is a cost collector. I would guess, I don't know for certain, that there would not be a similar, there would be one in each department, but I don't believe it would be the same unit codes, same series of numbers or letters that we would be able to run.
Okay, I will be asking if there is one. Thank you.
Okay, further questions? Seeing none, is the objection maintained?
No, I remove my objection, Mr. Chair.
Okay, objection has been removed. Are there any further objections? Seeing none, Amendment LHDOA 1 is adopted. And we will take another brief at ease.
And Representative Grin, would you move Amendment HDOA 2?
I move Amendment HDOA 2.
I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
This amendment would reduce the available unrestricted general funds for training and educational conferences by $12,500 in the services line of the labor agreement's miscellaneous items. The allocation covers things like training, educational conferences, agency memberships, employee tuition for supervisory bargaining unit members, and though in some past years confidential employee association members, partially exempt and fully exempt employees can also attend those trainings on a space available basis. Currently, the state is contractually obligated to provide $50,000 in funding for this training. However, over the last 9 years, the Department of Administration has spent an average of $37,200 for this purpose. This amendment would cut the historically unused portion of unrestricted general funds. Bargaining for the supervisory union agreement will begin in the fall of 2018, at which time it may be prudent for the department to reconsider these costs.
Representative Foster, did you... You objected for?
Correct, I objected.
And do you have any discussion? Or we have?
Yep.
Is there further discussion? Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually would like to make an amendment one to this amendment. That would be to move it to $50,000, which I believe was the original. Well, first I'll move and then ask for the discussion.
Is there an objection?
Yeah, objection.
Yes. Objection from Representative Guerra. Representative Pruitt.
Oh, just to understand the amendment, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. I can't tell if Representative Pruitt is trying to restore the full $50,000 or delete the full $50,000.
Yeah. Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Chair. Yeah, move it to a decrement of $50,000.
Okay. Then I do object.
Okay. Speak to the objection. Or speak to why I made the motion. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure there was an objection first.
So, for
a couple of reasons. I believe actually in the subcommittee that the chair of the subcommittee offered the $50,000. And I think for the very reason that it's highlighted in the right here. Oh, it is right in front of me. That while accommodating positions in certain bargaining unit agreements, these services are not statutorily required, nor are they integral to the department's mission or efficiency goals. I think that's why I'm asking for the full $50,000. I think that highlights right there, should we be funding things that do not, that are not integral to the department's mission or efficiency goals, or are not statutorily required. And so I that is why I offered to put the decrement at the full $50,000 amount that was originally in the budget.
Mr. Chair,
further discussion, Representative Guerra.
Thank you. If I could just understand from the maker of the amendment, what kind of training would disappear if the $37,000 remaining is deleted, and I'm just trying to assess whether or not this is a good idea. So I don't know what kind of training would disappear, if you could tell me.
And I'd ask the chair of the subcommittee.
My amendment? I'll let's see. talking with the department, through the chair, I'm sorry, Representative Guerra, the training is including but not limiting to input from a committee. It's things such as conflict management, persuasion and influence, strategic planning, conflict resolution, leadership skills, supervisory training, communication, coaching, and team building skills, such as those. It's generally decided on through a survey of the membership and must be approved by the commissioner of DOA, what trainings they take up.
Thank you. Through the chair, I think I asked the question wrong. Through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
Yeah. So I think I understood the original amendment, HDOA 2. I guess I was just trying to find out if we totally deleted the training as opposed to deleting the excess authority, what would disappear. And I guess I understand what would disappear from what Representative Gren said. I wanted to know what the effect would be of the additional amendment by the mover of the amendment to the amendment.
And that Representative Gren.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Guerra, it's my understanding that the state is actually contractually obligated to provide $50,000 in funding for the training. If that was eliminated, it would trainings would be potentially absorbed through the Division of Personnel.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Chair. So I'll maintain my
the trainings would still occur.
Okay.
Yeah.
Representative Guerra.
Oh, I'll just maintain. I understand. I'll maintain my objection then to the amendment. To the amendment.
And Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we're only spending part of that. So what training are they currently utilizing? Because we're taking some of it out, so we obviously don't feel obliged to do all of it. So what specific training are they doing of that whole list you gave?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I believe it varies from year to year based on what the survey results come from of the supervisory union of what they're asking for each year. I think it varies throughout the year of the topics that they cover. But we do have someone from the department that I perhaps would speak to that more clearly.
And we could bring them to the table.
Again, Sherry Lowenstein, Department of Administration. Through the chair, if Representative Wilson could repeat the question.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we heard the $50,000 we had to do, but obviously we don't because we're taking some of that away. And there was a whole list that the representative gave us on types of training. So of this, of what you've actually utilized over the years, can you name the specific training, who's attended, and what the training was?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, as Representative Gren mentioned, each year the need is assessed through Labor Management Council. That's usually a union and employees that look at the training needs for that period. A contractor is hired, brought in, and staff are trained. If there are seats available, we can open that up to other members like CEA or PX or EX staff to participate in. We attempt to get $50,000 worth of training, but when we're unable to find a good training, we have not spent the full amount.
I follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
So maybe I'm just missing the basics. I'm sorry, I missed some of your meetings. What, who are we actually training, and what are we training them to do?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson. In this case, it would be supervisory staff is who is targeted, and it's really supervisory skills that are assessed where the biggest need is. And the training can vary, as Representative Gren mentioned, to any wide variety of topics.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
So where does the $50,000 come from? I mean, that seems like a very, I mean, now that we have online courses, people don't necessarily have to travel. If you have somebody who's been in the jobs for quite a while, they're not going to need the same training as somebody who's new. So where is the $50,000? Is it actually in some one of these unions' contracts that says we have to do a minimum of training, and $50,000 was it?
Through the chair, yes, that's accurate. The supervisory bargaining unit contains this language. It was added in, I believe, 1996. The $50,000 amount was added sometime between a few, I can't remember how many years back it was. 1996 is when the $50,000 was added. It was added to the unit's language in 1994. And it is a number that was given. It is contained in a separate component outside of personnel. So it's able to be tracked and used specifically for that purpose.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
I'm in favor of this amendment because obviously we don't have to keep all $50,000 because the amendment already takes some of it out. With ways of being able to train now, whether or not it's online versus, you know, in person, it just seems like it's just a number picked out of the sky. We haven't been utilizing it. You know, maybe we just need to send somebody back and have them renegotiate this part of it. But in times where this really doesn't fit the mission, doesn't fit into the Constitution, I know it doesn't seem like a large amount, but all of them build up, you know, pretty quickly, and we really should make sure that we're being very spending the people's money well. Thank you.
And Representative, I was unclear. Were you talking about the amendment to the amendment?
Amendment to the amendment. Yes, thank you. That's what's on the floor at the time.
So we, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the continued dialogue. Helps focus on what this actually doing. And I'm going to speak against the amendment to the amendment. The original amendment took out excess capacity, right? And that's what I understand it. It was the average of amount of what they're not spending every year, right? So somewhere way back when, they decided they want to be able to track training for the supervisory positions, and they decided to make it a separate line item, and that's good. When we have people in supervisory roles, we are, even though it might not be statutorily required, I think it's just a smart thing for the state to be doing, and I'm actually amazed it's that little. I've been involved in training and funding trainings, even online. It is expensive. You know, it is expensive. You know, people think, well, the state can get somebody to donate it. Well, everybody thinks the state's going to pay for it. You know, stuff doesn't get paid for. We get stuff we think is free from NCSL, but we're already paying for it. The state has an obligation to itself to make sure that its supervisory staff are trained. There are a lot of consequences when we don't have trained supervisors that rolls downhill, that creates other problems. And I think the small decrement from the original that represents, from what I understand, the excess capacity being eliminated is probably appropriate. but to just eliminate training for our employees, you know, take our staff coming in every year. It's like they don't get anything. No training, no briefings, none of the stuff that we do to bring them up to speed. I think we ourselves would be significantly handicapped. So while the reduction of the 12,005, the decrement, is might be appropriate, the reducing all of the training for a class of supervisors is just simply seems to be not wise. So I will oppose the amendment.
And further comments? I'll just comment that, you know, we may not have a statutory obligation. We have a contractual obligation, and generally we try not to break our contracts. We can negotiate in the next ones. The contractual obligation to provide training is there, and so I'm going to oppose amendment to the amendment. I think the reduction of taking that all out is going to be a not going to work. So is there further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, is the amendment to the amendment maintained? Or is it? We have a...
Yes. The objection is maintained, Mr. Chair.
Objection Guerra maintains it. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Guerra?
No.
Yes.
Representative Gattenberg?
No.
Representative Ortiz?
No.
Representative Pruitt?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Seaton?
No.
3 yea, 5 nay.
So by a vote of 3 yea, 5 nay, the amendment to the amendment has been defeated, and now we are back to amendment number HDOA 2. Is there further discussion on HDOA 2?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson.
Just one comment. I just find it interesting that the last debate we had was we couldn't break a contract and therefore couldn't do the 50,000. Well, if we do this one, we're also breaking the contract. So just want to put that on record.
Is that an objection to the amendment?
I don't know. If it was my objection, I'll take my objection back.
Okay. So is there any further objection to HDOA 2? Seeing none. Objected. You objected?
I'll remove my objection.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any further objection to the amendment? Seeing none, HDOA 2 is adopted. Representative Grimm, would you like to move 3?
I move amendment HDOA 3.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
This amendment would accept the governor's request to move the State of Alaska Telecommunication Systems from its current location in the Enterprise Technology Services to the new Office of Information Technology. The motivation for this transfer is to align all information technology functions under a single chief information officer, which is located in the Office of Information Technology Appropriation. This amendment is structural in nature and has no direct fiscal impact.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, HDOA 3 is adopted.
I need to remove.
Oh, did you?
I'll remove my objection.
Foster, thank you for removing your objection. After and now seeing no further objections, HDOA is adopted. It's one of those days. Let's see, where are we? Representative Grimm, would you move HDOA 4?
I move amendment HDOA 4.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
This amendment is another structural move without fiscal impact. It would accept the governor's request to move the Alaska Land Mobile Radio allocation from the Enterprise Technology Services to the new Office of Information Technology. Again, this transfer is necessary to align all information technology functions under a single chief information officer.
And
I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Foster. Is there further discussion?
We did that once.
Thought we did. Multiple objections here. It's this day.
It's a good thing we don't have a full committee.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none.
I'll remove my objection.
Objection removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, and I believe that was HDA4.
So, happy Friday, everyone. I move amendment, Governor's Amendment 2/15.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you. Representative Grin.
This amendment accepts the governor's request to increase the Division of Motor Vehicles Federal Receipt Authority by $500,000. In July 2015, federal regulations were enacted requiring the Division of Motor Vehicles to audit, on a biannual basis, commercial driver's licenses, examiners, and trainers. To ensure adequate compliance with this new regulation, the DMV applied for the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration grant in April of 2016. They were awarded this three-year grant in September of 2016, totaling $1,434,600. This amendment is necessary for the division to receive a portion of these federal grant funds in FY18, as the governor's original proposed budget does not contain any federal receipt authority.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, I don't object to it. I just want to make sure I understand kind of what we're getting into. It sounds like, of course, the feds enacted something and gave some money to go along with it, which is kind of their MO. When the 3 years is up, do we suspect that there will be, at that point in time, opportunities to pay for it through some sort of fees charged to the commercial drivers? What's the impact to us once the grant is complete?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I'll ask someone from the department to come to speak more clearly to that, if possible.
Department, come forward. Introduce yourself again for the record.
I'm Sherry Lowenstein, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Administration, through the Chair, Representative Pruitt. For this program, or these federal funds, is to set a program up within the Department of Administration, Division of Motor Vehicles, so that they can meet the federal regulations and on an audit biannually, each state driving office and our contractors to assure that they're providing the correct training and giving people the right licenses. In this case, when the program after it's set up, the two positions that we have included with this are non-permanent positions. They'll be deleted. We will have about a $36,000 right now software cost, and there will be potentially a fleet vehicle that we need to pay for. Other than that, we're trying to use internal resources that we have. It's just getting it up and running and the data in place is what the grant is generally for.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, just to follow up, just make sure. And the $36,000 software, is that going to be a yearly cost, or is that a one-time cost to get it set up, and then we'll be fine after that?
Through the chair, this will be an annual maintenance cost.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
So I think I understand that the intent is that the positions that will come will be deleted. Is there an intent to have the $36,000 in the fleet vehicle covered by some sort of fees to those commercial the individuals looking for the commercial license, or is that you're just going to absorb it into DMV total costs?
Through the chair again, Representative Pruitt. We do not have a fee lined out for it now. We do have a cost that's associated with the type of license, and I believe that the cost of the license is being looked at as well, so that it's possible the license cost could go up.
Okay, and then one more follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
Is the $500,000, just to make sure I understood it, is that for the next 3 years it will be $500,000, or is that an initial $500,000 and then it will be utilized, that one $500,000 lump sum will be utilized over the course of 3 years?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, we have a supplemental of $301,000 for the current year, $500,000 for next year, and that $500,000 will be reused again the following year.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we had Representative Wilson. Did you have a...
I have a question. Thank you. Do we know this grant? It sounds like we don't have any choice. So there was no legislation that was necessary to pass this new regulation besides not having... you know, the people to be able to put it in place. There was nothing that was required of the legislature to see exactly what this program will do, what kind of effect it will have on not necessarily just the DMV, but we have a lot of private contractors as well.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's correct. There was no legislation required for this. Federal regulations passed, and we're trying to meet those regulations so that we do not have an audit finding.
Thank you.
And Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that there's a fair amount of demoralization going on with state employees, and I just want to state this for the record. There have been a number of cuts over the years. The Department of Administration has cut staff. I know nobody meant it this way, but what your department did was you applied for $1.5 million of federal grants to deal with a federal regulation that we had no control over. You got the grant. You're saving us money by doing that. If you didn't get the grant, my understanding is we would have to pay the money. So I'm just going to say, number one, I appreciate the service of the people who are working for us, and I appreciate the hard work that you probably engaged in to get this competitive grant to offset money that we would otherwise have to spend. I don't want to be part of any unintentional message that workers who are working really hard should be demoralized. So, thank you.
Reverend Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, the questions I think we are pertinent to ask here is, you know, I'm glad that you went out for a grant, but sadly enough, most of the federal grants that are out there that are enticed by the federal government is for many other things besides what we think they are. And when it comes to our truckers, it just seems like there's more and more layers that are put upon them to do their job every day. And I just want to make sure that these funds aren't going to require them to make it to where we don't have as many truck drivers or may negatively impact you as far as, you know, the DMV and then our private contractors as well, because money will run out and there will be some costs associated with it. And I know you'll have to put that out there to the private sector, whether it's the truck driver or the fees, to be able to collect these. So, is there some place that we can actually look and see, you know, what exactly these regulations are? I mean, I'm not going to oppose this amendment, but it's just another one where it didn't take the state to weigh in on what we're going to do, and there's going to be a big group of workers who are going to be impacted by this, not just the workers who have to put it into place, but those who have to abide by it. And I just don't want to tilt the scale to where it's not worth people going after and doing it. And usually the federal government has given us money to do something. It's not normally a good thing. But, you know, but if we could look, find some place to find out exactly what's all entailed in that, I'd appreciate that. You can get it to the co-chair just so that we can see what now we're agreeing upon from the federal government.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we'll certainly get that to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Is there further discussion on GA2? Representative Foster?
I'll remove my objection.
Is there further objection? Seeing no further objection, GA2 is adopted. And we will take a brief at ease. Committee's back in order. Representative Grimm.
There were six statutory change proposals approved by the subcommittee. The first statutory recommendation I'll forward to the chair of the House State Affairs would streamline the Alaska Public Offices Commission reporting statutes, ensuring that the commissioner's ability to fulfill its mission and more effectively serve the Alaskan public. The second statutory recommendation I will be forwarding on to the House State Affairs will provide statutory authority to the Alaska Public Offices Commission to collect fees from certain user groups. The third statutory recommendation going to House State Affairs would standardize the minimum age across senior fee exemptions within the Division of Motor Vehicles. And the fourth statutory change recommendation being forwarded to the chair of the House State Affairs Committee would modify or repeal two vehicle registration fee exemptions with the Division of Motor Vehicles, reducing foregone general fund revenues. Statutory change 5 and 6 will be forwarded to the chair of the House Judiciary Committee for consideration and further explanation, which includes a statutory change recommendation number 5 would examine whether it would be beneficial to add a requirement that persons seeking public defender services or a fee waiver for services sign an affidavit of assets for qualification. And finally, the sixth statutory change proposal recommends the exploration of instituting a nominal fee for child in need of aid case appeals to the Alaska Supreme Court.
Okay, thank you. There are other information that you have to come forward?
That concludes my Department Administration budget closeout.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for Representative Grant? Seeing none, the Department of Administration closeout has been completed. Brief at ease. Back on record, and we'll now move to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Representative Guttenberg, will you give your report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Finance Subcommittee of the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development held 7 meetings with the department during our review of the governor's budget. The House Finance Committee accepts the moves. We would recommend that we accept the governor's budget with one amendment, and I am offering 3 pieces of intent language. The governor did not submit any recommendations for Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development last week, so the budget before my amendments include unrestricted general funds of $11,536.6 million, designated $44,593,000.2 million, other funds $58,461,000.7 million, federal funds $20,356,000.3 million, for a total of $134,947.8 million. The management plan included $19.3 million more GF than the governor's FY18 budget does. So there's 63% less UGF in the commerce budget now before us than there was in our peak budget year. Only 6% of the department's FY18's budget is UGF. Commerce has 512 permanent full-time positions, 5 temporary positions, down more than 8% from the FY15 high. 6 of the department's programs are self-supporting, including banking and securities, corporations, businesses and professional licensing, insurance investments, Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. And in FY16, it contributed $26.4 million to the general fund. That's $26 million after paying for its 6 self-supporting programs. I submit the following budget recommendations for your consideration.
And Representative Guttenberg, are there 6 amendments that are being proposed, or are we?
Yes.
Are we there? Oh, these are.
There's 4.
4 budget amendments. Okay.
I have 4.
Thank you. I found my place.
Thank you. So the amendment number one, do you want me to move the amendments or just describe
yes.
them now?
Move okay. the amendment, please.
All right.
So would you move H, CED 1?
Mr. Chair, I move HCED 1, add promoting statewide broadband access to the Department of Reporting Strategies to the legislature.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion.
Mr. Chair, a couple of these, this one and the one that deals with the RCA, are things that I have put in because I am very concerned about the nature of the lack of direction and the state has an understanding broadband and the direction we're going. So this one is the intent of the legislature that department include expanding broadband access across Alaska as its goal in its comprehensive economic development strategy. And there is, and provide to the House Finance Committee and the Senate Finance Committee and the Legislature Division by December strategies promoting broadband. There is a committee now in Commerce that is looking at a broad statewide economic development plan, and broadband is one of those things included in that, and this would give it more direction and give it some importance in developing a infrastructure plan that includes broadband.
Thank you. Representative Pruitt, did you have a question?
Yeah, a question about it.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So first thing I want to make sure that I understand is, first, the cost associated with it, is if there is a cost. Second, I mean, are they at a point where they can fulfill the December 1st time frame? I mean, when we start looking at broadband across the state, that could be a pretty pretty big task, so just curious if they're able to hit that deadline. And then is the intent to direct them to do this? Because it sounds like instead of asking them more about the feasibility of it or if it's something that we should focus on, it really kind of sounds like we're directing them in a policy manner. And so just understanding, is it truly the intent that we are asking them to start the process of the state being involved with broadband on a larger scale? And that, of course, that swings back to the cost discussion, both this time and into the future. So those are kind of some of the questions, Mr. Chair.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg.
The statewide fiscal strategy is already in place. It's already been paid for. I mean, it's already in operation. There's federal matching funds. It's not the intent at this point, and there's no specific plan in place outside of the Alaska plan, which is a segment of the Alaska telephone community, to move forward in a plan. So this is just, we're not asking them to do anything physical, not lay wire, not lay conduit, not put up satellites, but just to include expanding broadband access across as its goal in a comprehensive development strategy. So what is it saying? It's important in that strategy to include broadband. The group is already meeting in Commerce. This is just saying this is very important to do.
Is there further discussion? Representative Foster?
I'll remove my objection.
Is there any further objection? Seeing none, CED 1 has been adopted. We will take a brief at ease.
Okay, House Finance is back on record. And Co-Chair Seaton, would you move Amendment HCED 2?
Mr. Co-Chair, I'd move HCED 2.
Object for discussion purposes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. The Governor included this grant funding within the FY18 capital budget bill, funding for the Life Alaska Donor Services, Inc. is a more more appropriate in the operating budget bill. Funding will be used for promoting the donation program. Money collected by the Division of Motor Vehicles through the voluntary donations to the Organ Donor Awareness Fund, created under AS 1350-160, is deposited into the Anatomical Gift Awareness Fund and then granted to Life Alaska Donor Services, Inc. for promotion for promoting the donation program. Life Alaska has served since 1991 to facilitate the donation process in Alaska. They provide tissue distribution to local surgeons, manage the Alaska Donor Registry, and work in partnership with Life Center Northwest, the federally designated organ procurement organization located in the state of Washington, to educate the community about anatomical donation. Life Alaska also has an extensive family of services bereavement program that provides ongoing compassionate support to families who have lost a loved one.
Okay. We've got a question from Representative Wilson.
Do we know how much is in this fund? I mean, total in the fund? I know we have, you know, we're delegating a certain amount, but how much is actually in this fund? I've never heard of it.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. The grant has been funded for several years. Since FY12, the amount has ranged from $35,000 to $80,000 based on donations. These are donations that are voluntary donations that are received and then deposited in fund. And that's the range of the donations that have been received.
And follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
So why are we doing this? This is not a government function, so it's... I mean, I know we do license plates, and some of those monies go to nonprofits. So why would these nonprofit or wherever, or I'm not exactly, Life Alaska Donor Services, why would they not be like a pick, click, and give, or where people could just do it? Why is this coming through us?
Representative Seaton.
We have AS 1350-160, which directs this program. And it's collected through the DMV in voluntary contributions. There is a insignia put on the license plate for someone that is going to, not on the license plate, on the driver's license of someone if they're killed in an auto accident or if they go to the hospital, have their driver's license with them, then they know that they have registered as a donor. And this makes tissue donations available through this donor registry for other recipients across Alaska. So it's an Alaska statute, and that's why we do it.
And final question, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
And is there an administrative fee to this donation that's collected by the state?
Representative Seaton.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Are there any further questions?
I withdraw my objection, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the objection has been withdrawn. And so HCED2 has been adopted. Okay, Representative Guttenberg, would you move Amendment HCED3?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HCED3.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a $500,000 increment. It's in research receipt supported services. I will. The way I understand it is in FY16 they had unexpended balance of $125,000. They lowered it, and then they didn't have enough. And this is an increment that was recommended by this our fiscal analysis to allow them to use receipt supported services in order to. Run the Corporation and Business Licenses Division.
Okay. Are there any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, Representative Seaton, is your objection maintained?
It is not. I'll remove my objection.
Okay. The objection has been maintained. Any further objection? Seeing no objection, HCED3 has been adopted. Co-Chair Seaton, would you move Amendment HCED4?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm withdrawing LHCED4 at this time. The department has had recent conversations with the federal government that will require changes to the proposed language, and so I plan to bring up a revised amendment later in the House Finance Amendment process.
Okay. With that, we will take a brief at ease.
Guttenberg, would you move Amendment 5?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HCED 5.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
And thank you, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can read it to you, or I can just give you a synopsis of what it says. You know, when we were going through the department for ADA's budget, looking at the Ambler Road, there was a significant gap between what they had on their webpage and their PowerPoint to what they could actually tell us. So it's 200 miles of road, 11 considerable bridges to cross rivers, which bridges now cost easily $20 million apiece. We could not get answers to understand the nature of the road and what it's going to cost. Some people say it's $400 million. This is simply asking for information to a report by ADA. It should be in their drawer, right? Put it out and put it together on the table, estimating the cost of planning, engineering, and permitting. Basically, give us a picture of the road and what it's going to cost. And one of the things that we've always heard about this road is there are business partners that are participating with the development of this road. We could not find any. So just we want to make sure that if we're going forward with the road, that a project like this, which could be considered by the time it's done a mega project, that we have the information we need to make decisions and understanding what it is actually in front of us.
Thank you. Are there discussion? Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to make sure that I understand it. It sounds like there were some things that they're not able to tell us, and maybe there's a reason that that's the case. If they're working on a project with certain partners, if there's a certain information, I mean, I do see in here that it says proven reserves are reported to the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's something that we can look up on our own, but it sounds like it might be information that they have that they have to keep confidential. So I guess my question is this something that ADA has requested, or do they have consternation with us requesting them giving us information about a project that they might feel should remain confidential?
And Representative Wilson, or did you have a response, Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We could not find the name of anybody. We could not find, I mean, I would not expect anything confidential to be given to us. That's not the intent, and we couldn't do that regardless. But just to give us the bare bones minimum of what they have, what's real. You know, they've been working on this for a few years now. They should have concrete cost estimates and things besides a couple of PowerPoints to show what they're going to do with hundreds of millions of dollars. It is a pioneer road. There are no standards, but we're working forward to putting the blades down and moving on this project. The legislature should have a better picture. I don't imagine it'll be a comprehensive, complete plan of what it is, because that's not where we're at. But we couldn't get answers to even the most basic questions.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. Representative Wilson?
So I'm still lost on this one, because ADA does a lot of projects. They're kind of their own little entity over here. So is this particular project, are they currently asking money from the state of Alaska for this project?
No, they have the ADA has them. I believe they have the money, and I think the governor got some more. But when we wanted to get a look at what the project was, the amount of information available to us was, look at the PowerPoint, right? So it's just a map with the map of the road and 11 bridges and
looking for a little bit more detail to understand what's going on, because at the end of the day, they will be coming back for us for more money, because the road will, is it going anywhere? Are there anybody on the other end of the road that actually wants this? It's going, ending up in the Kiana Ambler area, but give us some concrete evidence that this is, that we're building a road to something that somebody wants.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
So I understand that they're not asking money. They may come back and ask, and at that time, once they put in some kind of request, and I would expect that they would need to bring more. However, they might find partners, private partners, who are willing to do that, because it's my understanding the reason that is this is no longer a DOT project is because it was going to be too expensive because of all the regulations, again, that we'd have to do to build a road. That's why we went to ADA. That's why the project went to ADA. And ADA, from my understanding, and we're working with them right now for the gas that someday will hopefully come to Fairbanks, is that they have a process to be able to determine what information they need, whether the project should go forward. And I don't see where at this point for us to get involved in it, since they're not asking for money from us and not doing it on every project that ADA does, you know, it's going to kind of set a precedence that this particular one would do. Are we going to, from now on, anticipating that somebody may be asking for funds, determine that we need to know more? And to me, we should wait and find out whether they come back to us, because they don't come back to us and they go out there and they find federal funding or private funding and they build it by all the set areas, then good for them, and that's what we should be encouraging. I really think this sends the wrong message, because they're not asking anything from us at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Guttenberg is just trying to be fiscally responsible. As I've sat on this committee over the many years, the Ambler Road comes up, somebody says, let's fund it, let's not. We get very little information. We don't know whether or not it is a worthwhile investment for the state to be involved in. It may be, it may not be. I think Representative Guttenberg is just asking to know what the scope of the costs are going to be and what the scope of the buy-in is going to be by potential users. And it's information we really have never discussed in this committee, as in past years, as money has sort of flown around. And I think it's a responsible thing to do. So I support it.
Further discussion? Reverend Foster, do you maintain your objection?
I'll remove my objection.
Yeah, I'll object.
Who wants to be?
I don't care who objects, you know, but.
Representative Pruitt objected.
Yes.
Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
But there is no funding. That's the whole point. They're not asking for any funding from the state of Alaska. I completely agree. If they're coming back to us right now and saying, we want you to put in this amount of money, we absolutely should know where it is. But I'm pretty sure there's projects that ADA is currently doing that we don't have any idea how much money is going in, because ADA is a financier. Anyway, they finance it. So, you know, if we're going to do it for this one, then are we going to expect that every time ADA makes a decision to do a financing, not asking for any state funding, needing no bill, that we're going to expect to have certain types of information? And I don't think that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to do their due diligence, make sure that it all pencils out, go out and sell bonds or sell whatever they need to do the project, and move forward kind of. That's why they're not actually part of it. If they were here asking for us for money, I would absolutely agree with Representative Guttenberg, and we should have all the information about where the money's going and why they need it, the whole scope of the project. But right now, they are asking absolutely nothing from us, and hopefully they'll be able to go out there, do the project, and not have to come back from the state and show us how easy it is when we don't get involved to be able to actually get a new road built in Alaska. You know, what a good thing that could happen.
Further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative.
And I completely agree. I think we're talking about our investment bank. These are our investment bankers. And here we are asking them to move within our time frame, to move within basically that we want to micromanage them. And I think if there's one thing that we've shown in Alaska when it comes to ADA, when the legislature starts micromanaging ADA, we fail tremendously. And so, I, you know, this is something they're going forward with, that they will determine. They will come to us and ask for money, and that's at that time we can determine whether or not we want to finance them. Beyond that, they should be doing their due diligence in trying to understand whether or not there is a project out there that has the potential to bring revenue to the state, jobs to Alaskans, and potentially even open up access to portions of the state that currently are having to pay have higher costs, et cetera. And so they're doing what they should be doing, and I don't know that us micromanaging them is going to provide a better result or get something to us that we feel will make us, maybe we'll feel warm and fuzzy in the end. That's not the intent. ADA is there to invest in Alaska, and we should let them continue to invest without our micromanaging. So that's why I will oppose this this language here.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. ADA is a state agency. It doesn't have federal funds because this is a pioneer road, right? There is no standard for a pioneer road. DOT can't build a pioneer road. I'm sure that's why ADA has it, because it's a road without standard. Mm-hmm. Bridges and other things are going to have to meet some standard if you're going to put heavy equipment over it. I don't want them to do anything. I just want the legislature to have a snapshot of where they are now, more than a PowerPoint that has a line across a map. That's my point. I'm not asking them to put something in front of us that to go or not to go, because that's not where it's at. That's not the intent. But the legislature, using ADA as a state agency, the legislature has should have a requirement itself to look at things when they're spending a lot of money already to move this road forward, and just have, where are you at? Just tell us where it's at. Tell us what's going on. They've been working on feasibility stuff, EIAs, bridges. Just, I don't want to, we're not looking for a finished engineering design project, because that's not where it's at. That's not what's going to happen. But just tell us where it's at. Show us how you're going to get there. Show us who the partners are. If you don't have partners and partners are being negotiated, tell us that. If you have them, tell us what's going on. You know, we've criticized a lot over the years for mega projects and roads to nowhere. Some of them have been poorly named and stuff like that. But give us, for an agency, give us a snapshot of where you're going, of where it's at right now. I don't want to look at things in a snapshot either. But I don't want to go another 10 years and look back and say, hopefully I won't be here in another 10 years, but look back and say, why didn't we know where you were then? So this is just a look-see. Tell us what's going on. Tell us if you have partners. Tell us where the engineerings are at and what the estimates are, if you've got them. That's all it is. We're just doing a little bit of due diligence and asking one of our agencies to report back to us. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, we have HCED 5 before us. And would you call the roll, please?
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative Bren?
No.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
No.
Representative Pruitt?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Yes.
For yay, for nay.
So,
bills.
By a vote of 4-4, amendment number C5 fails. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HCED 6.
Object for purpose of discussion.
And Representative Wilson objected. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is asking the RCA to do basically what's called a gap analysis. Remember, RCA is completely self-supported with agents with fees, so there's no money involved here. The Alaska Telephone Association's Alaska Plan, which is not everybody, was adopted by the FCC. The ATA is scheduled to give a presentation before the RCA next month. They were supposed to be yesterday, but they put it off. But there are, it is not, the Alaska Plan does not cover everybody. It is not all areas of the state. It is not every carrier. It's the ATA is pretty, from what I understand, is mostly, well, not every telephone carrier as well. But the legislature in 2014 released a broadband task force report. And although that wasn't complete by itself, there's nobody in the state to give us a snapshot of where we are, right? What, where are the gaps? What's going on? And, you know, the RCA is tasked with doing things like this. This is what they're in their mission, although they don't regulate broadband in the state because the FCC has primary, has primacy. We're asking them to take a look, and this would be a report, something like this, the gaps analysis, that would be something that would be used in conjunction with the previous amendment that we had for the state to be able to plan what we should do in the future. It is simply a comparison between what we have and what we don't have, asking the RCA to do that. There's no cost. They're all self-supported. Something they look at anyway. They're already scheduled to do a presentation in front of them, and then hopefully it just doesn't sit on the presentation by the Alaska Telephone Association, doesn't simply sit on the desk. Something actually happens. So while the previous amendment asked the state to put it a priority for broadband, this one is asking the RCA to look at what's going on and actually give a report between what is, what we have, and what we don't have.
Thank you. Is there discussion? Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, do we have somebody from the RCA available?
We have, we have Department of Administration and we have Legislative Finance. I don't believe Legislative Finance has any information. Do we have somebody? We don't have them signed up.
Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Would you put yourself on the record?
Sure. I'm Catherine Reardon, Admin Services Director for the Department of Commerce, within which RCA falls. We do not have a specific RCA representative at this meeting.
Do you have questions for the Department of Commerce that they may be able to answer?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know I've gone to the RCA on some questions that we've had in the past. It has to do with, most of it had to do with transmission. And they're very careful on things that they can and cannot weigh in on. That's what we learned from it, you know. And so what I wonder is that, is this something that they would feel comfortable bringing together and weighing in on, or would that somehow interfere with decisions that they may have to make as a regulatory commission over the same issue? I just really don't know.
Go ahead.
I'd like to, you don't hear from that.
The chair representative, I do know that RCA Chairman Pickett is aware of the language and has not communicated any specific concerns about the intent language to me. I see that the intent language says that the legislature is requesting a description of how RCA can promote broadband infrastructure and financing statewide, in which I would imagine they could say, we can't. There isn't a way for us to do that. They haven't presented a concern such as you've raised.
So just to add something to
Representative Guttenberg.
So, I really understand your concern about the regulatory aspect of it, but they don't regulate broadband. It is not in their purview. It is the FCC has control of that.
So, Mr. Chairman,
Reverend Wilson.
So if it's not in their purview, then again, you know, I'm concerned that we're asking them to do something that's not in their purview. I understand where the representative is coming from, because there's been several task forces, there's been several reports, and all you do is get a big report on nice paper that waits until the next person does exactly the same, you know, information. It's not that I think it's a bad idea. I just don't think that this is the agency for it. I think there might be somebody else in the Department of Administration that might be able to do it. I know we've had broadband from the Department. I know the Department of Education has done, in fact, I think they're the ones that did the broadband study last. And I guess that's where my concern is. Not that the idea is bad, but I don't think the RCA is the right entity to be doing it. And again, it's not in their purview or necessarily their expertise as well. And we're also asking, I think, to promote broadband, and that's not why they're there. They're there to regulate utilities and to determine, and from my understanding, their docket's pretty full on most occasions, so I don't want to increase what they have to do if they're not the, if they don't have the expertise that we're asking for here. And I know some of the other agencies have already started this. The bigger thing would be is, would they be the proper agencies, because they've set up the task force before, and why they haven't fallen through, especially the Department of Education, who I know has done a lot of work on it.
Hi, ma'am.
Hi, Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you. All of the state agencies that I have found only do to primarily do broadband work on what the state agencies need, right? That's looking at a bigger picture across the state of a statewide viewpoint of where the gaps are. I have looked around and trying to find, everybody has a little component. Department of Education, I've talked with their some of their broadband people, and they talk about programs and E-rate, and we're talking about tribal and native clinic broadbands. There's nobody has a comprehensive view of anything. There's no state agency that I have found that has a overall comprehensive question in this. I mean, DOT is for transportation modes has that, but as far as in state. Looking at the statewide picture outside of state government, the RCA is the closest it comes to. Now, the broadband and telecommunication is listed in the things that they're supposed to do. The FCC says, but we do that. We regulate them. But the RCA does have telecommunications in their list in their mission statement. And trying to find an agency that looks at the big picture, I think it's a failing of the state and has been for a while. The broadband task force has sat on the table for these years and nothing's happened. The economic strategy group that's meeting is just big picture, not specific things. I'm just asking somebody that has regulatory authority that looks at the big picture where things are. As far as I could tell, the closest I could get to is the RCA. Just give us the picture, and how can we promote broadband across the state?
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson.
And I totally respect, you know, where my colleague is coming from. Without hearing from the RCA, if we were talking about transmission lines and a bigger picture on having so many utilities, I would say absolutely that's something they deal with all the time. They don't deal with broadband, and I think the frustration is nobody seems to be dealing with it. We just talk a lot about it. I just don't think it's underneath their purview to do this, and with a docket as full as they have and all their others that they must go through, I feel uncomfortable increasing it to something that, again, they don't regulate, they don't have, therefore they most likely wouldn't have the expertise that we're looking for here, and probably would end up spending time and their money and their energy when we didn't go to the right place in the first time. I don't know where the right place is. I'm just pretty sure this isn't it, so I'm going to maintain my objection.
Just a closing comment, Mr. Chairman.
And further discussion? Representative Ortiz, did you have?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to speak to the necessity through my experiences in both House Education Subfinance Committee as well as in the Fisheries Committee. The issue of broadband is a big issue. We're talking about making change, making reform, distance delivery options, cutting costs of education, perhaps through distance delivery. All that's good. Sounds great. But we have a broadband deficiency out there that's significant. The information's needed. Now, whether or not this particular agency is best suited to give us that information, I don't know. But I applaud my colleague's attempt to, as an attempt to get the information, because we do need the information. So, thank you.
Comments,
in closing, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the Alaska Telephone Association, who wrote and convinced the FCC to adopt the Alaska plan, seems to think that the broadband is the appropriate place to be in front of the RCA because they're doing the presentation there. That's where that's happening. So the industry has already decided that that's the appropriate place for them to do the presentation, to give them the overview of what's going on. So just in that context, it just clearly seems to be, without having a better place, without having a broadband office on the third floor, it has to land someplace. And every day that it goes by without the state not advancing its own interest, as far as every department in this state has a deficiency on broadband and costs. Every child needs to do homework at home. We talk about prisoners, transport, telemedicine, everything we do. Every day that goes by that we haven't acted, whatever small way we can, costs us more money. Thank you.
Okay, the objection is maintained, so would the Secretary call the roll?
Representative Graham?
Yes.
Representative Gattenberg?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Pruitt?
No.
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
6 yay, 2 nay.
So with a vote of 6-J, 2-NAY, HCED 6 intent language has passed. Representative Gattenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And follow through with the comments to that we did with admin. I had no recommendations to any committees concerning indirect costs.
Thank you very much. Is there further information? Seeing none, we have going to go to the DEC report. Representative Foster, will you give us your report?
Sure. The Finance Committee for Department of Environmental Conservation had 5 meetings focused primarily on indirect expenditures identified in the 2017 Legislative Finance Indirect Expenditure Report, and recommends the House Finance Committee budget for the Department of Environmental Conservation include the following funding: $15,297,900 in unrestricted general funds, $29,892,200 in designated general funds, $12,801,500 in other funds, $23,896,600 in federal funds, and that's a total of $81,888,200 for FY18. This is a decrease from the FY17 management plan unrestricted general fund of $1,530,800. That's a 9.1% decrease. The subcommittee has no recommended budget amendments. The subcommittee has one statutory change proposal, which we'll be forwarding to the chairs of the House Resource Committee, and that is a recommendation that the House Resource Committee bring forward legislation amending statutes relating to the authorization of the department to create and or make adjustments in permitting, permit fees, other fees, and fee structures which were identified in the 2017 Indirect Expenditure Report. And these changes could enable DEC to capture lost revenue associated with the costs of regulated inspections and permits.
Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I met with my mayor today. So underneath the federal funds, with a new administration, and especially when it comes to the EPA, a lot of those things have been frozen. Do we have any idea of how much of, because, I mean, there's a lot of federal funds here, $23 million. Do we know how much of these may be under jeopardy right now as the new administration has come in? Have they been frozen? Because my understanding is the $2 million I know that's in here for my borough, they've been told now is kind of like not off the table, but not really on the table either. And I'm just, you know, really concerned if that other $21 million has also got some issues because of how the new administration in D.C. is going to be handling it.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. We do have with us from the department, Tom Cherian, if you could come forward.
Mr. Chairman, would you come forward and put yourself on the record? Mr. Chairman, did you understand the question as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair. For the record, Tom Chiron, Admin Service Director for DEC. Representative Wilson, we've been working with our federal funding partners. We believe that they're working through that. We don't have any, as far as we know, they've not deducted any funds yet. They're working through that. We believe that what's reflected in this budget, we believe that we are going to receive that.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson.
And do you have kind of any timetable of if there would be any potential that we might learn that some of this federal funding may not be there, that we might know before the end of our session?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we are not clear about that. We are still working with them. We don't have any clear indication yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a big concern because, again, we, you know, for a whole bunch of different things, we rely on this funding. If not, then the decision whether to go forward will have to be a different discussion. But thank you.
Are there any other comments? Seeing none, that will complete today's work with the Department of Environmental Conservation. Our next meeting is Monday, February 27th at 1 p.m. Please note the time change. It's 1 instead of 1:30. So we're advancing an hour. At that meeting, we plan to bring up subcommittee reports from the Department of Corrections, Department of Fish and Game, Department of Health and Social Services, Department of Law, Department of Public Safety, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, University of Alaska, the judiciary, the legislature, and if time allows, other agencies as well. You have on your desk a number of folders which are the budget subcommittee reports. And so is there anything else to come before the committee? Time is 3:10, and we will be adjourned.